I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me at Adam Savage's Workshop Cave in San Francisco for a conversation about the upcoming Silicon Valley's premier Comic Con. Tune in for a fascinating commentary by Silicon's creative director Adam Savage and executive director Trip Hunter. Adam Savage, ready to rock and roll?
Ready to rock and roll.
All right. Tell us about where we are. This is a mind-blowing, literal cave in San Francisco.
We are in my cave in the Mission District of San Francisco. It's a couple thousand square feet, a couple blocks from my house.
So if somebody could go inside Adam Savage's brain, this is what it would look like.
It is. And clearly what you see when you're in here is that I'm a high-functioning hoarder. It is a tile puzzle. The only reason we can actually sit here is because I had a shoot here last week and I had to
get rid of
a bunch of stuff. But it's a constant battle. I have a storage space a block away.
You live right nearby.
Yeah, I live a couple blocks away.
So this is the equivalent of your garage.
It is. And it's really, really dreamy. When I'm in television production, I'm able to be in this shop maybe a few hours a month. But since COVID, I've been doing 40 plus hours a week in here.
So that means more things have been created in here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we went from releasing on Tested, my YouTube channel, we went from releasing one or two videos every week to seven videos a week. So hundreds and hundreds of hours over the last couple of years.
What do your YouTubes focus on?
It's on making. And
could be anything.
Anything. My definition of making is as broad as I've been able to make it, which is anytime you use your point of view to make something from nothing. It doesn't have to be a physical thing. It can be temporal. And so, yeah, I've done everything from shop infrastructure. Actually, the day after Thanksgiving, I came in here and did a 45-minute piece to camera about how I had learned and realized that there's no such thing as a measurement. And that was one of our most popular videos in the last 6 months.
Explain that.
Well, I spent a lot of time here over COVID dialing into my machine tools, my mill and my lathe. And a mill and a lathe are effectively, if society collapsed, you could rebuild them with these two tools. And I became a more refined machinist. I did what a machinist would call chasing zeros, getting to more and more precise refinement. So I've done everything from building shelves in here to building sculptures inspired by Moby Dick to talking about engineering like that.
That's so cool. It's so hard to stay focused with you.
Yeah.
Because everywhere I look, I mean, there's Star Wars, Darth Vader helmets. To the right, fascinated by the NASA space suit. And somebody said, you made that?
Well, so actually, yeah, I've been building, replicating, and collecting spacesuits for about 25 years now. But this one on our side here is the first time I've designed and built one from scratch.
Has NASA contacted you?
Well, I have a lot of friends over at NASA, and I have a long and wonderful relationship with some astronauts and some of the techs at Johnson Space Center and at the Smithsonian. So it's a long-term relationship I have with NASA.
Tell us about, like, the helmets. Why are they here? Did you design those?
No. Most of these are helmets from movies. We've got, like, samurai helmets, Kylo Ren Star Wars helmets, diving helmets. I realized that my obsession with spacesuits is actually equivalent to my obsession with armor and, as well, safety gear. Every time we needed a piece of safety gear on Mythbusters, I researched and bought the best version I could afford of that safety gear. And I realized that spacesuits, armor, and safety gear are all the same thing. They're human beings engineering our own hermit crab shells and makes us, for better or worse, the most successful species on the planet. And I find that really inspiring.
Over your shoulder, tell us about that.
The armor there?
Yeah.
That is a brand new piece I just collected. Okay. That is a replica of Colonial Marines armor from Aliens. But this set was actually hammered out of aluminum by the original maker of the armor for Aliens. His name is Terry English.
Wow. For a moment, roll back in time.
Okay.
In your life, where were you a kid and were you a geek always?
Oh, yeah. No, I've always, so I'm the son of an artist and a psychologist. I was born and raised in New York City in Tarrytown, New York. And I was always encouraged to try different things, to make my own toys. And whenever I was really interested in something, my parents made efforts to put that in front of me. And I followed that same thing with my kids, who are now adults. The environment I grew up in was a very creative one.
So you get out of high school back in New York. Then what happens to your life?
I go to NYU and study acting for 6 months.
Wow.
At the NYU Tisch School for the Arts in the experimental theater wing. And then I dropped out. I ended up getting a kind of an ersatz film education because all my friends at NYU were in the film department, and I art directed films with them, and I worked as PAs on their productions. It's a, you know, that's a whole plasma pool you jump into and don't leave for a few years. And that eventually led to working in theater and then in special effects here in San Francisco.
So when you came to San Francisco, who hired you? What were you doing?
So I was in New York. It was 1989. I was working as a graphic designer, but I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I submit that New York is a terrible place to be if you don't know your ambition. It will chew you up and leave you by the side of the road. San Francisco is a phenomenal place to be if you don't know what your ambition is. So I moved out here because I've always loved this city.
Did you have a job when you came?
No. I moved into one of my closest friends' apartments, and I got a job in theater. And that job led to being trained as a rigger, as a carpenter, as a stage painter. And that ended up leading to special effects, but none of it was planned. I came here thinking that I wanted to be a sculptor. Jamie Heineman, who I worked for in the 90s, called me up and he said, "Hey, I just got a call from Television Network. They want to make a show called Mythbusters. You want to help me make a demo reel? I think we could make a fun demo reel together." And what Jamie didn't know is that I had just bought myself the first laptop built for digital video editing, the Pismo by Apple. Spent the spring of 2002 teaching myself the rudiments of filmmaking. And so when Jamie called, I had this everything I needed. I showed up, we filmed for 2 hours. We sent that demo reel to Discovery, and they showed up 3 weeks later to film the pilots of Mythbusters. And we didn't stop filming until the late fall of 2015.
So Mythbusters goes away.
Yeah.
How do you reinvent yourself?
Just before we wrapped Mythbusters, I was hanging out with a friend of mine who was an actress on one of the CSI shows. She had been on it for 6 years and then left. And she said, "Oh, sweetie, your show is ending after 13 years. Get ready because you're going to go insane." And I was like, "What do you mean?" She's like, "The life change will be really weird." And she was right. Right after we finished, I kept up a kind of feverish pace because that was the pace I had been doing things forever. And it took about a year for me to find a different pace. You know, my wife was like, "Do you have to bolt to the cave every day at 8 a.m.? And I was like, "Actually, no." And so now I go and get coffee around 9. I come in here around 9:30. It's a much more relaxed existence, but I had to learn that.
So in a new incarnation, Silicon.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, Silicon started as the first homegrown Bay Area con in a while. Steve Wozniak brought it to Silicon Valley in a few years. We went to every Silicon as tested, and I went in costume, and we built a really lovely relationship with the con. And then back in 2019, the con invited me to come in. And that felt, I think, both Trip Hunter runs the con, and to me, like a really natural extension of the friendship, the professional relationship, and the overarching goals we had, which was promoting letting people find their freak flag and flying it.
So it's to share.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I turned 50 5 years ago, and my kids moved out of the house, and I'm in that stage of my life where I can see that I'm on my long decline, right?
<yeah. laughs>
Maybe it's 40 more years. I hope it's 40 or 50 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, as soon as I felt that, I felt a real abiding need to pass on everything. You know, I love the cosplay community specifically because it is so deeply sharing based. And same thing with the maker community. That wasn't natural. That wasn't the way it started. There was a lot of gatekeeping in the early days of both movements, making and cosplaying. But I feel like the kindness won out. And at Silicon, we consider it one of our primary missions to promote that sharing and to reduce the gatekeeping until the threshold to entry is as close to zero as we can make it.
Talk to us about cosplaying as it relates to people that come to Silicon.
Okay. Actually, I'd like to talk about cosplay as it relates to all humans for a second.
Yeah, there you go.
Because anyone listening who's heard the term cosplay probably has an opinion that it's a little weird. And I want to point out that everyone listening has a favorite shirt or jacket or pair of shoes that when you put them on, life feels a little better. And that's all that cosplay is, just at a bigger scale.
Right.
The transformation I felt the first time I put on a costume when I was 10 years old, I dressed up as Fonzie from Happy Days.
I felt, well, someone pointed out that because I only had a jean jacket, I was officially Chachi. But that transformation altered me and still continues to. And I've spent a long time both enjoying it and also examining it. And I think that as human beings, we are a couple of things. We are explorers and we're storytellers. We go to the edge of the known and we report back what we find. And the stories that move us, wherever they are, when we cosplay, we're literally pouring our bodies into those stories. And we're learning what we can about ourselves and about those narratives by doing that. And so at Silicon, the cosplayers that come show so much of a breadth of creativity and genius. And
give us some visual.
Yeah. The first cosplay that ever really shifted my whole understanding was I was at San Diego Comic-Con around about 2010, and I ran into a Hello Kitty Darth Vader, bright pink. And I thought, oh, wow, I really understand something I didn't before. These mashups of, like, how do I take this and make it my own? Mm-hmm. Because there's one thing to dress up as Darth Vader. That feels great. I've done that. But it's another to think, what does Darth Vader mean to me and where can I take it? That's a whole nother thing. So you get both at any given con. And it's so much fun to be on the floor of ours and watching people walk around. Also, when you've invested in a costume and you run into someone else wearing the same costume, you share an intimacy with them.
A brotherhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know if you've ever hung out with someone you grew up across the street from but weren't friends with, but just growing up in the same location links you, and the costume work does the same.
So let's talk a little bit more in specifics about Silicon, because that's coming up.
Yeah, Silicon is coming up. It is the last weekend in August, the 27th and 28th at the San Jose Convention Center.
And do we want to have Trip jump in at some point?
Yeah, by all means. Let's wheel Trip up. Trip up.
Let's unpack it.
No, I love this chair.
This is Trip Hunter, the CEO of Silicon.
Hello.
It's an incredible event. One of the things we try to do that makes our event a little bit different is to come up with a theme for it every year. And I don't think there are a lot of cons out there that do that. And our theme this year is creating the improbable. So much of what Adam's been talking about is this ability for people who come to be able to leave feeling empowered, right? Feeling that they now can take the first step in creating on their own. And I think that's a really important component.
Yeah, we want to stake out a claim as the Maker's Con. Mm-hmm. All cons are Maker's Cons, absolutely.
But this one, you have classes.
Not only do we have classes, we're actually going to devote a whole portion of the floor, a significant percentage of the floor, to a makerspace where we will have classes, workshops, demonstrations, hour-long contests. What can you do with a coat hanger in a couple of hours with cardboard? You know, when I meet people who want to cosplay but haven't yet, they always say, I just haven't figured out the right thing. I don't think I have the right skills. I don't know if I have the right materials. And I want, again, to lower the threshold to entry so that they take that leap.
That being said, have you had people show up that almost arrived by accident who were clueless and were transformed by coming?
Interesting. That's a really good question. I'm not sure about that. I will tell you, there is a kind of costume I see at cons all the time, which is the person who was like, I'm going to a con, and they grab some things they have around the house and they scotch tape some things on themselves. Like maybe it's a Captain America star on their chest or something. But the people who are doing that, who are doing a genuinely crappy thing, but they're doing it because they want to play.
Because that passion.
Yes. And that to me speaks so much volume about what we're all getting out of that experience. And they might worry that like someone will make fun of them because their costume isn't amazing, but that's not going to happen. You're going to run into people who are like, dude, yeah, Captain America.
And we were recently talking to a very interesting person, Jonathan Knowles. He used to be with JPL, and he was saying the maker definition is much broader than most people define it. Like a woman or a man knitting a scarf, they're a maker, right? And you need to be able to embrace all of those different platforms that people are passionate about.
Sewing is making, gardening is making, coding is making. I had a guy come up to the autograph. I used to speak at the San Mateo Maker Fair every year, and I would always sign autographs for 2 or 3 hours afterwards. And a guy came up and I said, what are you making lately? It's a question I ask everybody. He said, I don't make, I code. And I yelled, coding is making. And he burst into tears. Again, like, we're all part of the same journey.
What a wonderful morning. This is great. And I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Adam Savage's cave on a mysterious street in San Francisco.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.